Hey, and welcome back for another episode of the Juris Podcast, the official podcast of the Juris Project, where we're building simple, accessible technology to make it so that people can do more without a lawyer, and lawyers can amplify the work they're already doing. This episode is deep down the blockchain rabbit hole with Ari Lotfipor, the CEO of Jalapeno Inventive, a company that works on gamifying the distribution of crypto tokens, but he's been at it in the crypto game for a long time, so the rabbit holes are deep. Ari's awesome, so is this conversation. Hope you enjoy. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast for more of this stuff. Head to jurisproject.io for more on what we're working on. And we're at jurisproject on Twitter. And hey, we're builders and we're explorers, but we're not advisors. Nothing you hear in this podcast is investment or legal advice. Awesome, man. Thanks for coming out for the, you know, to do this thing.
Yeah. Thanks for the random invite. I was like, yeah, podcast today? Okay. Yeah.
Well, with the right people, you don't have to do all the sort of pomp and circumstance of let's set up a thing. It was like, hey, do you want to talk about this on a microphone for other people to digest? You were like, yes.
That sounds like a scaled way for me to spread my perspective.
So we'll talk about your project in the blockchain space and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like the place to start is toe shoes, though.
Toe shoes. Toe shoes. This is how we got here.
This is the part of the I feel comfortable asking you to do a podcast immediately stack, for sure. So I think the toe socks is just the tip of the iceberg, I feel like. Like you were wearing bright pink pants and had a peacock feather your lapel.
Just peacocking, just a little peacocking.
I've always appreciated the extent to which techniques like that can make a networking event easier.
Yes. And sometimes when I give them away, those people get laid because of the feathers.
We have, see that button up there that says button on it?
Bhutan. Yes, Bhutan.
That was a promo we did for a web series project where there's a thing on the back of it that says the only rule of the button is that anytime anyone else asks you about the button or comments on it, you have to give it away. Yes. And then you have to come back to our table and get a new one.
Nice.
It worked really well.
So I think we're gonna be doing something similar with those peacock feathers, where me and a friend were starting kind of a side company.
The rule is anytime someone comments, you have to, you know, give it away.
Yeah. Well, mine is whoever's really drawn to it, intrigued by it, find a way to integrate that into their life. You know. So I've had 5 or 6 of them so far, and I've given them all away. I gave my last one away on Friday night, to someone just out at the bar, right, who had a red jacket, and I had my white jacket and these red pants, and we were just out. We just connected, and he gave me his pocket square and I gave him my feathers, and that's how it happens. I think it is all just that peacocking, like, right, active sort of.
And is that because other people start conversations with you? When people just come talk to me, I'm perfectly comfortable talking to them.
Yep.
But if I don't have something to say, I am really bad at going, hey, what's up? Even if we're in a place where we've already, because we're there, have agreed that, like, this is,
We're here to talk to each other.
We have something in common, and we're here to talk to each other.
Well, they're conversation starters, and it makes it easy for anyone to find something, and then you start a conversation. So, I mean, one that I actually love is, I mean, the one that everyone asks you typically is, oh, so what do you do? My response is usually, oh, mostly mushrooms and edibles. Right. And then they're like, well, you're in the marijuana industry? He's like, no. You just asked me, like, what do I do? Like, right. I prefer those. And then sometimes they'll continue to try and be like, well, what do you do for work? And there may be some other tangential conversation that comes up that then further diverts them hearing about what I do for work. And so the most iterations I've gotten was 3 iterations before they finally just gave up. There was one guy that pushed it to the fourth one. He's like, what do you do for work? Talk to me now.
Right. Well, then to kick this off, I'll be more pointed. Why don't you start by telling your sort of your crypto story, your blockchain story?
When I found crypto in 2013, it was with Dogecoin, and it was insane, because I had heard about Bitcoin before, thought it was a scam like everyone else did. And then I see it spiked to 1,200, crashed down to like 600, see this article on Reddit, and people are talking about Peercoin and Namecoin and Dogecoin, and I'm Googling all of those. And there's a Jackson Palmer's tweet about Dogecoin. It's the next big thing. I'm like, oh my God, what is this thing? And I get on eBay, buy 25,000 Dogecoins for $45. And then I was like, okay, so how do I get it? And finally, the seller showed me instructions on getting a wallet, downloading it, and then sent me the currency. And I was like, okay, I got it. Like,
well, even before that, your background is in computer science, right?
Yes, computer science. Well, I dropped out in my senior year because I got a job in nuclear medicine with Siemens Healthcare. And I was already working in radiochemical before that. Got that job while I was working at a gas station and just met an interesting guy and was asking questions. And he ended up offering me a job.
He was like, peacock feathers, son. That's the secret.
So explain Dogecoin for anyone that's maybe not caught up with that phenomenon. So I love it.
Dogecoin was...
They sponsored exactly a NASCAR
that. Yes.
Car at one
Josh
point.
Josh Wise. I have two Dogecoin cycling jerseys. But yeah, so Dogecoin was this... It was like a shit coin. It was a joke coin. It was literally a joke. That's why Jackson Palmer was putting that out there. Like, this is the next big thing. Like, ha ha ha. And it's a script currency copied from Litecoin. And when it released, it was like December 12th, I think, 2013.
Which is one of the goofy things about it. Goofy is a funny word to pick, but like, it's one of the things about cryptocurrency and blockchain in general that I think people struggle with sometimes. The idea that you can take, like, when you say that you forked Litecoin or something like that, like, you literally can take the code base, copy it, rename the file, and be like, hey, we got a new coin here.
Yeah.
and like, if it works, then it works, and now you have this thing that is a legitimate way to transfer value.
Yeah,
right. So the Dogecoin community is super, like, It's based around the meme of the Shiba Inu.
Yes, which he passed away recently. The original dog.
But like, you guys got together once the community, like, once there was some value in the fact of the coin.
Well, this was before the coin was really like valuable. That's
right.
The thing.
It was just sort of like this uniting thing, right?
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. And they made crypto fun. They brought the magic back to the magic internet money.
And then it got kind of a magical community together who did things like, didn't they sponsor a bobsled team or
bobsled,
something?
Bobsled, Jamaican bobsled team. The race car driver, Josh Wise.
Yeah.
But because they had, in their vibrance of just organically creating this community, which it was so organic and fast. They had like 20,000 users on their subreddit in a month. Or 2 months, it was insane. The fastest growing one ever, because it was so fun. And that's the context that people are willing to jump through at that point, jump through all the hoops of like downloading the wallet,
you just sign up your for a thing. And
like there were so many steps to go through, and you had to really trust this stuff when you're downloading shit.
Right.
And clients, it was able to achieve that. Dogecoin was able to achieve that faster than anything else has ever been able to. So Dogecoin is the case study that I base my entire vision upon.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so that's a perfect transition into jalapeno.
Jalapeno inventive.
And what you're working on. I like just the inventive piece of that feels like a Willy Wonka word. Right? Like, they're not really, it's in that territory of like imaginariums. And, yes. You know, right? Like, let's ideate a thing. And it's like, what is that even? You know, but it sounds fun. Okay. Let's do it. So jalapeno,
yes.
This is the answer. I'm getting the answer to what do you do other than mushrooms and edibles.
Yeah. Yes, the diversions. You succeeded. It's about mass adoption is the intention of jalapeno. That always has been.
Of crypto,
yes.
Currency, blockchain technology.
Consumer mass adoption of this new thing that is happening. Because everyone needs to be a part of this. It's very important. You and me, a lot of people see the importance of it, but not a lot of people have been taking the approach that they need to. And so at this core, mass adoption. We do it through education and entertainment. So games are the fastest adopted anything that exists in the world. Like people adopt games faster than anything else. They can be quite epidemic.
The hot one.
Yeah, just explosions.
50 million downloads in 2 days or whatever, yeah. Right?
It's the only context that can grow that fast. And that so it is the adoption context, period. It is the best adoption context. So we take this idea of, you know, incentivizing people to learn about crypto, starting through games and then gamifying that education process. So my intention was originally we need to make this game. It was a virtual geocaching game I had designed called DigioCache. And I spent 8 months mocking this up in like 3 stages. And it was like Wealth Map or Pokemon Go with crypto in it. This was back in 2014 that I did mock this up.
And when you say with crypto in it, you mean like you could go to a place.
You could go to a real geocache.
Log in. And they
pick
would,
up crypto.
And pick up real Bitcoins.
Yes. And pick up crypto,
or potentially
pick up
get
assets.
A ping that says like, hey, you're in this Starbucks. Would you like some...
There was a whole advertising side of it.
You like some actual, you can spend it for real money, cryptocurrency? You know, which is just even a weird thing to...
Well, we have to start in digital context first. I think it's about allowing the user to extract some kind of value, and that value doesn't have to be tangible with their fingers. It can be experiential. Like, experiential value is cheap to create.
Well, I think Foursquare is the thing that gets me, is the bridge between... this idea of games and then this idea that people will, they want to go out in the world mm-hmm. and do stuff. We had a project we worked on for a while. It was basically like location-based freeze tag.
Uh-huh.
Same idea. It was just like, hey, I'm waiting in line at Starbucks. Let me see if there are any of my friends around to tag them.
Mm-hmm.
We had sort of a critical mass problem where we didn't have the money to promote that to enough people to get it going.
Mm.
But Foursquare is the proof that that dynamic exists, right? People will... check in and tell you that they're at a place if they get a discount at that location, which is what, you know, it's in terms of game behavior, it's the same territory as geocaching.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to explain geocaching really quickly just as a phenomenon?
Sure, I guess. So I wasn't really into geocaching. Yeah. But geocaching is people will take, there'll be like something posted typically online. I think that was what really made geocaching possible, was this ability to disseminate information.
Usually like GPS coordinates.
Yeah, GPS coordinates. You would take your handheld like Garmin GPS or the big sport yellow ones.
Yeah, right.
I don't remember what they're called, but I remember the yellow, I had a yellow one somehow for some reason. And you go around and you go to these coordinates. There's people use like an ammo box or just some kind of, you know, protective box that has a notepad. You got to sign in, you know, notepad. You can leave a story. You can leave trinkets. You can just, it's a box that you can do anything with within the contents of the box.
So this is pre-smartphone Pokemon Go.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And so I had actually seen someone put a paper wallet in geocaches. I'd seen a post on Reddit that someone was doing that. And I was like, that's not scalable. How do we make that scalable? Like, how can we make a game out of that? And then that's when I started designing this virtual geocaching game.
And so if you chase it from that behavior, the immediate dream that I have is like a national park coin,
mm-hmm.
where you can only earn these non-fungible, you know, like whatever, ERC-721 tokens if you have gone to the top of Half Dome in Yosemite or something, right? And checked in from your GPS coordinates. I guess you could also spoof it somehow.
Well, so that's why we're having... I saw a really interesting talk in Denver. This guy, Will, I got his card. He runs the Decentralized Colorado meetup in Denver. And he was talking about these blockchain-based location systems, like mesh network location systems. Someone apparently has a way that I think they said it's that you can just, all the cell phones are working together in this mesh location network, and it's all being, you know, put into the blockchain, and it was really cool. It was really cool. And it was, I think that is the solution for spoofing.
It's an interesting fundamental so one of the things people don't understand with GPS stuff is there's still a certain, this is the other failing that we didn't realize until it was too late of our project, which for context, we were working on in 2010. So that's the technology we had at the time. at that point, the GPS latency was like, it could tell you where you were to about 100 meters, uh-huh. which is all of a strip mall, unfortunately, right? Like, if you consider, so it doesn't not know if you're in Starbucks or the store next door or the store next door to that or store next door to that, unless you tell it, which is what Foursquare was. So there's this ongoing problem of we need to know where you are in physical space to provide some of the services that the internet provides. And so, like, a lot of times you hear people talking about cell phone tracking and stuff, and it's like Verizon has to know where you are to a certain degree so that it can talk to your device, mm-hmm. which is why when they say cell phone tracking, everyone's sort of like, yeah, yeah, we know.
We know how waves propagate. We can triangulate right. just from the data, and, like, that's how we know where you are.
And so, but the fact that all of the stuff to do that exists on that device means I could also independently create a connection with your device and know that you are 10 feet from me right now based on those two devices communicating, right? So we can start to create a system where the spoofing problem is fixed with the Yellowstone or the Yosemite situation because there are 10 other people around you with devices and they've also all been GPS pinged and anonymously checked against yours. And you're like, okay, the certainty of the mesh here knows that you are in fact in that location.
Right. It's
super compelling project to chase with this.
It's fact. We're finally finding right. fact.
Right.
And there's no way around that. So,
Anyway, so that's the type of rabbit hole we're here for sure. But let's get back on track with so geocaching gets us to
crypto geocaching
project that you were working on. Talk about Flappy Coin.
Flappy Coin. I love Flappy Coin.
First Flappy Bird is where you have to start, right?
Yeah, so that was one of the realizations that I saw how fast games could proliferate because that exploded and people were just fervent about it. They were just like, I will pay $300 or $1,000 for an iPhone on eBay because it has Flappy Bird right. on it.
Well, and the other problem on the other... So the part of the problem with that fad type behavior where a thing catches on that fast and is like a little... You know, this is... Well, for one, the fact that the word fad exists, right, is a thing where it's like, this is not new behavior. Hula hoops sweep the globe, you know, for a week. And then after that, they're like a sort of tangential amusement, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so Flappy Bird was a game that was impossible to beat. That came out, it was 2004?
It was, no, 2000, I think
no,
it was
I'm sorry, 14. 14.
13 or 14.
13 or 14?
13, yeah, because the Flappy Bird or the Flappy Coin came out February 2014.
And what didn't, it was the... Game was removed from the app stores eventually.
Well, the developer pulled it because
it.
He felt bad about how much time people were spending playing this game. Mind you, he was making like $50,000 in
right,
banner
in advertising,
ad, like per day. So,
but people were clearly like addicted to this. Impossible to the game was like out right in front. The developer was like, "This game is impossible.
Like this is the game that never ends."
Which turns it into like a test of skill on par with juggling, where uh-huh. it's just like, okay. The certain number of balls is impossible for most people, but it doesn't stop them from trying.
Right. And they get a little better and a little better. And it's that drive towards precision that right. is addictive.
And so
that's what Flappy Bird
is. So that was Flappy Bird, in case you didn't catch that wave, right? I was in law school at the time, so there were people in class playing Flappy Bird on their phones while professors, you know.
I was teaching an engineer, training an engineer in Dallas. That's how I kind of like got to see Flappy Bird because he was talking about it. I think he had it on his phone and he was, you know, pretty proud of it because he had gotten it before, you know, they pulled it. So they pulled it,
but then people had it installed and still had it. So then there ended up being this submarket of like you could buy a cell phone on eBay that still had Flappy Bird on it. That, I mean, if you're on Android, you can probably still play it, right?
Yeah, and there's so many clones now.
But like on an iPhone, I would have trouble getting it unless I found an HTML5 version on a website or something, right? Which probably exists. I mean, you can go play Oregon Trail in HTML5.
Ah, Oregon port. Trail.
But so Flappy Bird.
Yeah.
How was Flappy Coin connected to Flappy Bird other than the picture of the bird?
Yeah, it was a script coin. It was a straight Dogecoin clone, like straight up. Same block time, same everything. That's why people jumped on it. They thought, oh, this is associated with the game. It was not. That developer walked away. I think another developer took it over. And then finally, like, I just realized I just have to take over this coin. That's the only way to actually move forward with it because I still had that strong belief in the games. And so,
and it had enough traction that you thought you could use it.
No, it was actually,
or you just kind of were like, hey, this is a place to start with a code base.
I started buying it up. I ended up buying 38% of the supply of Flappy Coin.
Okay, so you hostily
took over Flappy Coin in 2014, 2015. The end, yeah.
Which is a funny idea, right? That you can even just do a hot, like, I mean, it's totally a, it's hard to do with Bitcoin at this point, right? Because it's hit a certain threshold. But like up to a point, you could still buy out the entire like capacity to commit changes to the Flappy Coin blockchain.
Yeah.
Just by controlling of, you know, a high enough percentage of the mining nodes, right? Essentially.
Well, I didn't have the current someone else was taking care of the miners. I forked it and just started to take it over. I mean, because that developer had walked away, the other one just disappeared. So I was like checking, you know, posting a few things on Bitcoin Talk and just, hey, is the admin alive? Nope. All right, I'm taking this over. Here's the new website. Here's the new GitHub. Like, hired a developer to move it to proof of stake.
Right.
And then he ended up not doing a very good job.
It happens. I mean, it's a
thing. He was young. It was early, you know, people are just getting into, even, well, not just, but, you know, there was still a lot of naivety in that development space. And so, yeah, so
I have a laundry list of things I fucked up on previous projects. That's, you know, it's just life in our space.
It's how you learn. It is the only way. But yeah, so then Cripsy was the last active wallet we had. This developer had kind of fucked up this code, so we couldn't deploy it to other exchanges. And then I ran out of money. October 2015, Flappy Coin collapsed, and I was left holding my bag of 28 billion worthless Flappy Coins. So that was 3 years ago. Fast forward to May, a group of developers got the wallet from the Cripsy lawsuit under the agreements that they would revive the currency. They had a few coins that they were helping to revive. And so they started to be worth something. So in the past probably 6 or 7 months, I've had sell orders of Flappy Coin out that actually end up funding my company, because we've run out of money multiple times this past time. You know,
it's a funny version of a common narrative in the space, which is a lot of the early developers have legs enough to not need to hitch their wagon to other projects.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, either they have, because they mined a bunch of Bitcoin, they have it and it's worth a whole bunch of money and they are able to live off of that, or they were involved early with projects. Like, the people involved early in Ethereum have a lot of money now, right? Yes. So there's these guys that, like, if you have 5 years experience in cryptocurrency or in the blockchain space, there's a good possibility that you are a millionaire and you don't need to sign up with me to be, you know, as tech lead on this separate project,
right?
Like, unless you really care about the project. Similarly, your experience with Flappy Coin, you know, it's more like my personal entrepreneurial experience of, like, being able to limp along by each thing being successful, but just enough that I lead off of it to do the next thing, but never enough that I'm, like, buying Lambos.
Yeah.
Right?
No Lambos. I will never buy a Lambo. I want to
Like, maybe rent one for a weekend.
A couple hours.
But so... Shit, where were we?
Flappy Coin failures, entrepreneurial experience. Okay.
So Flappy Coin
crypto ability.
In part, it sounds like because of just the markets in general appreciating, like, people were grabbing anything they thought had legs and was a viable thing. So you got your coin appreciated, and so you were able to bleed off some of that value to, like, keep this thing going.
Yeah,
which gets us to Jalapeno, right?
Yes, Jalapeno. This is the fourth major kind of pivot that we've taken since the game. There were two advertising products we tried to build. The last one we couldn't launch out of beta because of Apple. They didn't like it. And then we pivoted full back over to crypto and this mass adoption approach with games.
And so
I got to start talking about crypto again, because back then investors were like, why does anybody care about Bitcoin? Why do game developers even care about Bitcoin?
Well, I think let's take the gamification idea back a bit to, like, you don't need cryptocurrencies to exist to recognize this behavior, right? If you've played
Starbucks
World of Warcraft,
it, you know,
right? Frequent flyer miles are you know, Starbucks,
Fitbit,
Starbucks,
gamified
coins,
fitness.
But so the idea of gamification is just, can we use game dynamics, things that we think of as like reserved for playing tag out in a field or football, you know, or like, so let's chase something like football, right? Mm-hmm. Football is just a set of arbitrary rules that we made so that two teams of a certain number of people can sit on a field and then have a contest that's fun to do. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, now there's way more involved in it when you talk about American football.
But at its core, there's an incentive structure.
Football by any title, right, is that big a phenomenon. But what you've agreed to is this structure, which like makes it a game. And we really love games. People, humans.
We love right? to play.
Yeah. I mean, not even just humans, creatures. Creatures love to play. Mm-hmm. And so the idea has always, with gamification, has always been if we can make it fun, essentially, to do X, Y, and Z thing, then we don't have to worry about the part where we explain to you that it's healthy. Mm-hmm. If we can make it fun to work out, we don't have to tell you come to the gym because it's good for you.
Right. Just like we don't have to explain how the blockchain works if we've created a context that is fun.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that kind of, I feel like, gets us to really chasing what you're working on with. No, the only other thing I think we need to hit there before we can really kind of connect
what's
dots
the missing piece
into your vision is the idea of the airdrop. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that has taken off in crypto, in the cryptocurrency community, and sort of thus as a way to incentivize involvement with blockchains is the idea of an airdrop. And the airdrop is essentially just a giveaway, right? Here, under this context, I will give you some of the tokens that within my system have value because that's our money. And giving away money is a really good way to get people to at least look your direction.
Uh-huh.
Right? So it's a very different thing from the alternatives, which are, I'm going to run ads and remind you over and over again to tell you what this value proposition is. So there's a dynamic now with cryptocurrency projects where a lot of projects just allocate some money to give away to the people that they want to be involved in the process. But now you get in a space where you're like, okay, but we're giving away money. And this is where I get to that weird World of Warcraft space where like people, I think the thing to understand when once you, if you want to take a step past the idea of World of Warcraft as a game, like people make bags in World of Warcraft and they put them on markets and people pay in money that they have earned by doing quests to get that bag that has more pockets or has a different picture on it or whatever, right? So the idea of a virtual economy to incentivize behavior, that's not even a, hey, maybe we could pull this off thing. That's a thing.
It works.
It exists. It happens. It works. World War, there's a lot of money tied up. There's a lot of man hours, woman hours, person hours.
Bot hours.
Bot hours, yeah. Tied up in farming money in World of Warcraft to trade for other things. Like,
so it's combining those. It's taking this idea that these real world secondary markets exist, these real secondary markets exist because of the game context.
And if you're talking about a backbone for a blockchain project, they also want people to be involved in their system, right? Mm-hmm. Like I, as someone who runs a blockchain, a tokenized blockchain project, I want people to get my tokens and use them in the way that they're supposed to be used. We deal with a lot of lawyers, right? They're smart people, but they're very focused on being lawyers. If your area of expertise is the law and I just need you on board with this tokenized system because you'll immediately see value and you'll go, okay, cool. Yeah, I get it. I got money in my wallet and I'm earning more and I can cash that out for real money and pay my bills. And I don't care how all these pieces underneath work.
So it's getting to that step is, right. is the most difficult part.
So how, because currently I would have to walk them through a process of downloading a wallet, signing up for this thing or that thing, trusting cryptocurrency.
These are the barriers to entry. I'm holding them up as you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There's four major barriers to entry.
What's the fourth?
So one is, I'll take a step back. The ones that I feel are the four is, you've got to know about it first. At a minimum, you've got to know about it. And then you've got to...
And we're pretty good at handling that piece via advertising, but also there are better, more optimized ways to do it with crypto.
60% of Americans know about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So you've got to know about it. You've then got to trust it. you've got to be like, okay, this is something that is not a scam. I'm not going to go to jail. It's not illegal. Like, I trust this as
the money shows
thing,
up.
This
like
thing
it's
that is being presented to me,
right?
Yeah, like, and then the third one is, technical barriers to entry. So that's it. Like, are you proficient enough to go through the process of getting a wallet, storing your keys, like having that unlock? Just, you know, there's that. And then the last part is, are you willing to go through those first three and then put in financial information to start partaking in the ecosystem?
Right.
So four really big barriers to entry.
So, so
and like any marketing funnel, you lose people.
Yeah, right.
All the way
down.
Every
step, you're losing people all the way down. And like, so frequently when we talk about marketing funnels, I'll end up saying to people, right, but is there a way that you can get them to like give you just $2, right? Because if you can prove that they put in their credit card information and hit enter, even if it does, you're not making money, that's a hurdle where it's like, oh, they're in so far that they've taken that financial step, right?
Right. They're now qualified.
Yeah.
They're qualified leads at that point.
Right, exactly. So what we
do is remove all four of those barriers to entry.
By making it a game.
By making it a game.
Right.
And by also giving the tools, very simple tools. Like, our wallet is going to be a web wallet, and it's going to do like four things. Sending currency to it is not one of the things it'll do. So we are not going to be the custody of people's funds. They have to go through some steps to learn how to use the wallet, but we're giving them more crypto as they learn how to use this wallet. And so we're training them. We're gamifying the education process of using crypto. And they never have to put financial information in. They don't even have to know what these coins are. All they need to know is that this set of coins is equal to some dollar amount. And they start to see, this is money? This is like actually money. And once they're able to extract value from that system, that's the full click. Now they are qualified because they understand it enough to know that it's money and it's able to transfer value. Regardless of everything else, it is able to transfer value. That's what we need to get people to understand. And we do that through gamified education. And once you have qualified leads and you can turn anyone in a game into a qualified lead, we then have the lead generation platform for the crypto economy.
And so that fourth point, the financial point, mm-hmm. is the piece that I think is...
We can gamify that too.
Right.
To get them to finally put in their financial information when they are to that proficient level that...
Right, of understanding what's... So, but I think that point is the essence of why blockchain stuff is, and cryptocurrency particularly, is so hard to sort of talk to people about sometimes, or for people to conceptualize, because like every conversation gets weird once money's involved, mm-hmm. right? Like that's one of those rules of conversation, right? It's like nobody's looking forward to the negotiation about how much, you know, I'm going to get paid to do this job. Especially if you're talking about like freelance people, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to design a website for you. The worst part always is now I have to quote you a price and feel like maybe you don't think I'm worth that much. Mm-hmm. And then like just money gets weird for people because it's so tied up in, you know, like visceral things like, can I feed my family? Mm-hmm. If you're too early when you say, hey, I'm going to need your financial information, people get skeptical because mm-hmm. it feels scammy. So the fact that you can tie these, the fact that blockchain and then cryptocurrencies as a layer on top have given us the ability to transact value in a way that is, you know, money-like. You can't immediately be like, it's a tokenized system. You can treat this stuff like real money. I'm going to need your bank account.
Yeah.
Right?
Everybody
goes, that doesn't seem right. But if you can have the onboard process be like, hey, here's how this works. We're introducing this to you. By the way, This is why Earn.com worked, I think. Mm-hmm. They're really good at making me feel like I have real money in that wallet now. It's only like $3. But if you just sign up, you get three US cash dollars worth of dollars just for going through their sign-up process and learning how their system works. Mm-hmm. It's lower grade than gamification. Like, you're not building Final Fantasy to teach me about cryptocurrency, although that's a thing you could do. If you just think about that onboard process from the perspective of a game rather than the perspective of I need to teach you these things, because it's a tool. Like, it's a hammer, it's a stick, and you hit it with a thing. I've taught you everything you need to know about the hammer, right? Go use it for things. Our tools are too complicated now.
Crypto has a UI problem.
For sure. And I think that's what you guys are attacking in that space. It's super compelling, just because it feels like it's, on one hand, it completely makes sense as a way to do everything. But there's this piece where, like, at some point you have to pull the rug out, right? And you got to be like, haha, guess what?
It is real.
It is real. And if you want to give us your bank account information, you can have it. You know, and it's like, but at that point, they trust you because they've been in the system for a little while doing the thing. And then it's just, that's this, what you're chasing there exists in the weird philosophy space. That's the kind of thing we try to chase with these conversations, right? Like, why is it so, like, it's a convergence that's like the ability to this layer that links the transactional piece of trading value back and forth. Mm. Oh, it just gets weird real fast. Like, you just, like, one order of abstraction from the ability to do that thing, and it's just...
Well, so
peacock feathers, you know.
that makes me think about. So one of my future visions, and I don't know how much people will hate me for this, but I think that disagree with me. Like, I think there really is a possibility for a currency-less society. Like, currency is just there to transfer value. If we have better mechanisms of transferring value, then we don't need currency anymore. Like, it's still pretty nebulous at this point, but I feel that in the same way that I've felt everything up till now.
Right.
That there's going to be, this technology is going to lead to no currencies anymore.
Well, I call it a layer of abstraction because it's like, if you think about abstracting one step back from the value of cash, like, you could burn a dollar. I could, like, paper cut you with it. You could just roll it up to snort things. But, like, intrinsically, that thing doesn't have much value. The value comes from the ability to use it for a transaction. And the thing that it turns out blockchain is really good at doing on some level is recording transactions in a way where they don't really even have to be tied to the medium of exchange. Mm-hmm. And once you take that and you diffuse it, you can start to use these mechanics that were reserved for monetary systems previously on, like, everything.
Yes.
So if I have rice coin and you have, you know, if you have bison coin, like, and I need bison and you need rice, yeah, I could pay you cash dollars, which is how we do it now. But also, we could just do that barter and then have it reflected in a way that, from a user experience standpoint, feels no different than we currently have with bank accounts. Because the other thing you have to understand is our money is already digital.
It's the access. It's an access. It's a resource and access based economy, or a resource access based economy. Like, you look at it like stock. I mean, again, your rice coin represent this rights to this asset, and you no longer... Oh.
And that coin has a certain value based on a consensus about what rice is worth globally, mm-hmm. instead of how much do you need rice? I'm going to play that against you to get as much value out of you. Like, so part of this is...
Well, it stabilizes markets in a way.
Fairness
and price.
Yeah. What it ends up being, which is no one anywhere on the earth ever has to overpay for rice because of desperation if we have a system where we agree globally on the price of rice always.
Mm-hmm. This is a whole new way that humanity is going to be able to transact.
Like, well, we're just scratching the surface. We've had barter before, but we've never had it in a way where...
I was just saying, barter 2.0 was... Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah, we've never had it with a transactional fidelity and a UX experience where we can then go look at our account. We can go balance our account of value against our ability to continue to survive based on, I'm trading this rice for this, for bison in my example, right? But never mind that barter piece. Like, I do web work for people. I do marketing consulting for people, right? Like, I have things of value that I give out in exchange for cash money. there's no reason that can't also be just a digitized thing where I balance out the value I got from web work, from business consulting, from market consulting, and the appreciation of the token associated with the project to which I devote most of my time. And then I go, okay, that's what this is worth globally. I can continue to pay for my family to live. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're really not too far away from what I've just described how I interact with my bank account online, right? It just, there's a centralized authority in the middle there called Bank of America that's taken a look at everything.
Sorry about that.
For good or bad. But I want to be respectful of your time.
Oh, what time?
As deep as we could get down any of these rabbit holes.
I mean, I do have time.
So we should wrap this thing up. Well, to be completely honest, I want to be more respectful of the listener's time than of your time. But that's purely utilitarian. You're one man stacked up against, I want to say, thousands of listeners. But I don't know.
Then I'll say it. Thousands of listeners.
There you go. But thanks for hanging out, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This was awesome.
Dig around the back of the cave on some of the weird...
Scratching the walls, man.
Weird stuff made up.
Yeah. Yes, it is. We don't actually need it. But hey, we've got to go through intermediary steps to get there.
We're getting there, though. Dig it.
Keep the charge going.
Have to come back so we can keep doing... Pick another rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. Thank you,
Jared. Refer people to the previous. Yeah, thank you.
I'm down.